Good morning. This meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so all participants, please speak clearly. Members of the public who wish to observe or address the board may join the meeting at the notice physical location or may use the Zoom application to address the board from a remote location. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available at www.cal-span.org. In addition, we are receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment or think you might be interested in commenting, you should already be in the Zoom meeting room using the meeting ID and password you received from the clerk. If you've not already received the meeting ID and password, you can go to our website at www.waterboards.ca.gov/North Coast. Click on the February 8th, 2024 board meeting button and follow the instructions to complete the virtual speaker card. You will then receive an email from the clerk with the Zoom login information. For anyone here in the meeting room that wishes to address the board, please complete a speaker card available at the tables outside the boardroom and give it to the clerk. For those in the Zoom meeting, your camera will be turned off and you will be on mute until it is your turn to speak. The clerk will unmute you when it is your turn to address the board, and you can turn your camera on. We will call each commenter by name and then unmute each commenter. I would also like to remind everyone, staff and commenters, to please state your name for the record before you speak. This is important in this meeting session setting. It is especially important for those calling in to testify on an item. There is a 5-minute time limit for each commenter. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, we will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are called upon during public comment. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, please turn your camera off and you will be placed on mute. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item, and then you may choose to exit the meeting or continue. Okay. Alex, would you say the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Yes. Okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're going to do the roll call. To my right,
Alex Hart.
Hector Bedoya.
Greg Giusti. Ryan Sundberg.
And Valerie, can you introduce staff, please?
Yes, good morning. I'm Valerie Quinto, Executive Officer. To my far left is Bailey Toft-Dupuy, Counsel to the Board. And directly to my left is Nathan Jacobson, also counsel to the board. To my right is Claudia Villacorta, Assistant Executive Officer. And to her right is Josh Curtis, Assistant Executive Officer. And other staff will introduce themselves as their items come up. Thank you.
Thank you. Board members, are there any ex parte communications you'd like to disclose?
Mr. Chair, not ex parte, but just general report. Since we last met, I've had several folks approach me with questions regarding Lake Pillsbury in Scotts Dam in northern Lake County, which is part of our region because it's the headwaters of the Eel River. There's a lot of buzz right now about the possible future removal of Scotts Dam, and I know this agency is involved in it. And you know what I know is what I read in public sources of information, and groups like Caltrout have been very open about their involvement and how discussions are progressing. So anyway, I've had several discussions with folks regarding Lake Pillsbury. Had a discussion. I just checked in with a lily bulb grower up in Del Norte County to get an assessment of the recent storms that hit that region and how those fields fared. A general phone call, getting an idea of how much water they had and how their field practices have addressed stormwater runoff. And then also been getting inquiries from folks, mostly in Mendocino County, just wanting to know the update on the progression of the vineyard order, asking when it might come before this board again. So there's, you know, a lot of interest in a lot of the topics that we're working on, and folks are reaching out just asking for updates.
Within a similar vein, I've had folks in the community and interested parties just inquiring or asking about any updates on the Klamath Dam removal project with the first drawdown that occurred here recently, and just kind of wanting an update, the public wanting an update from our board. So just wanted to share that.
Ryan, anything?
Nope.
Okay. Well, on a personal note, I've had some interactions on social media with people interested in finding things out as well. And there's an awful lot of misinformation out there, and people just in the public not understanding what goes into the processes of, for example, dam removals and the procedures and policies. And I've taken the liberty to address some of those. And it's an interesting world out there when people start thinking and they're fed misinformation. So with that, do we have Dee Dee? Our state liaison, is Dee Dee available?
Good morning.
Good morning, Dee Dee.
Well, good to see you all, Chair Bedoya and members of the board. I'll just start off with a few comments about dam removal. So I know at my last report in December, I did talk a little bit about the process that's underway with the Potter Valley project. And of course, we are involved, state board, and in collaboration with the regional board as our partner through the 401, the water quality certification process. But there's a process that's underway right now with respect to the Potter Valley project. And I know board member Giusti, you at the last meeting had some questions, and I was able to connect you with our staff to get, you know, maybe down in the weeds a little bit more. But just a big picture, PG&E does have, they've circulated a conceptual draft surrender application, and that includes options for with and without JPA regional entity that would be taking over ownership of the Potter Valley diversion facilities. It is in draft form, but PG&E's January 2025 license surrender application submittal will likely propose to decommission all facilities if there's not an alternative in place. And so to maintain progress on an ongoing diversion alternative, a schedule was put forth by the JPA regional entity that includes a March 15th, 2024 date proponents tentatively selected design option for purposes of continuing consultation. And so again, our role really is through the 401 process, as it was for the years-long effort for the Klamath Dam removal project, where our staff was very much involved through the 401 certification process. Okay, and so moving on to other items, I just want to briefly mention the governor's budget. 2023-24 budget, as I'm sure you all have been following the media on this, that we are in a situation with a significant deficit. The governor's announced budget is $291 billion spending plan that was announced on January 10th. with the state facing an estimated $37.9 billion deficit. There are other estimates that are out there from the Legislative Analyst's Office. Cal EPA, our proposed budget includes $5 billion, but it also has $489 million in solutions in order to achieve the needed reductions. And these are through reductions, delays in spending, funding shifts, and reversions to the general fund. Some key issues that I know we're all, you know, watching really closely is how does this impact our work to implement the waste discharge permit fund as a result of the Sackett decision, Sackett versus EPA, that significantly narrowed reach of the Clean Water Act. As you recall from previous updates, we are very well positioned in the state to maintain wetlands protections. But a lot of the work that used to be done by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and U.S. EPA has now shifted over to state and regional board. And so the budget does include $6.1 million in waste discharge permit fund and ongoing work for us in order to conduct the essential activities to protect the waters of the state. And then calling out a couple of other key areas, water recycling, which of course is a big priority for the state through the governor's water supply strategy. The budget does maintain $348 million that was previously allocated to water recycling and groundwater cleanup, but with a proposed reversion of $174 million in general funds and a delay of $100 million until 2025. For these programs. And then for PFAS, PFOA, it does maintain the $53 million previously allocated, but with a reversion of $71 million of general funds and a reduction of $30 million in support for that program. Shifting gears, I want to give a couple of announcements. We're working on a wastewater needs assessment. Recall that through our Safe Drinking Water program, we have a needs assessment that we really rely on for the disbursement of funds for that program, and we have found that to be extremely helpful. So right now, we're engaged in a statewide wastewater needs assessment, and we're forming an advisory group, and there are applications that are being accepted for that through February 29th, and really want to encourage all interested individuals to look into application to this advisory group. We really want to get a diverse group advising us on how best to move forward. Links to the advisory group application and participation expectations are available at our website at WWNA Wastewater Needs Assessment webpage. It's available in English and Spanish, and additional language services may be provided through our Water Board's Office of Public Participation. And then on Safer Drinking Water, we have a Safer Drinking Water Advisory Program meeting coming up here next week on February 13th. It will be the first meeting of this year in person at headquarters in Sacramento and also virtually. This advisory group advises our board on the Safer Fund expenditure plan and other key analyses and policies as needed. We just had our board meeting this week on Tuesday. And at the board meeting, we adopted the 2024 Clean Water Act Section 303D list, which includes listings for the regional boards that are on cycle for this year. And that includes listings and delistings for water bodies in San Francisco Bay, Los Angeles, Santa Ana, Central Coast, and San Diego Regional Water Quality Control Boards. The proposed final list and the staff report and summary of comments and responses to comments can be found online through the program page. Also on Tuesday, we reviewed our strategic work plan for this year, which is something that we usually do around this time of year. A lot goes into this, to the development of the strategic work plan in the end of the previous year, going through items that have already been addressed and carryover items and any new items of importance to the board for this year. The draft plan includes strategies for achieving the governor's water supply strategy, adoption of a maximum contaminant level for Chrome 6. We'll be really busy this year on implementation of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. We've received six basins from the Department of Water Resources that did not meet the standards. They're coming to us in tranches. So these are basins that are in critical overdraft, and those that have not passed the mark at the Department of Water Resources. And so those basins are coming to us for possible consideration of being placed on probation. So we'll be really busy on addressing the issues of those six basins this year. And then the Bay Delta Plan also remains a priority, and lots of activity going on this year with that. And then I'd like to provide an update on some key initiatives for the governor's water supply strategy, focusing on desalination and stormwater capture. On December 20th, our staff released the final seawater desalination siting and streaming report to expedite permitting. And this follows a public comment period and lots of interaction with our board and our sister agencies. This report outlines important considerations and best practices for seawater desalination proponents on how best to plan projects so that they may be permitted more efficiently by state and federal agencies. We convened a seawater desalination interagency group comprised of state and federal agencies that review environmental documents and permit or lease applications for proposed seawater desalination facilities. We also have a strike team that's identified criteria for siting seawater desalination projects so that they may be cost-effective and environmentally appropriate, and recommended potential changes to current requirements that we have in our ocean plan in order to streamline permitting. A list of potential projects will be released later this year. And then on stormwater, another important component of the governor's water supply strategy, our department or Division of Water Quality initiated a contract with the Office of Water Programs at Sacramento State to assist in developing a method to estimate the current stormwater volume amounts using open source tools. This project will also begin to establish an inventory of stormwater capture infrastructure throughout California. Work under this contract will begin in April and will be completed by June of 2026. And then I think I reported when I met with you last that we had an adoption hearing scheduled for the direct potable reuse. And I'm pleased to announce that at the hearing, we did adopt the direct potable reuse regulation. And those regulations will now continue through the Administrative Procedures Act process before final adoption in July of this year. And then on Chrome 6, staff is busy working on a response to comments. And we do have some additional documents that were released as part of the process. And so staff released those documents and has provided for an additional 15-day comment period that began on the 30th of January. Comments close on the 19th of February at noon. And then staff will be providing response to comments. We anticipate this will come before us for adoption at our first meeting in April. And right when I met with you last, I did announce several important actions that we took on an emergency basis. One on the Clear Lake Hitch, providing staff with the authority to have information orders for diversions, including groundwater in the Clear Lake watershed. The Office of Administrative Law approved those regulations on January 22nd, and the board has issued an information order pursuant to that to approximately 1,200 property owners on January 31st. And then on the Scott and Shasta watersheds, we did adopt emergency regulations on the 19th of December, and those were approved by the Office of Administrative Law on February 1st and are now in effect. But because of the high flows, there are no actual curtailments in effect at this time. And then we did receive a petition on the Shasta watershed on the 17th of January, petitioning us to provide for permanent in-stream flows, you know, beyond this emergency period. And we have 30 days to respond to that petition. And I know I'll be receiving a briefing on this actually later this afternoon. So hopefully we'll be able to report more the next time I appear before you. And that's all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Edie, thank you so much for joining us and providing such a detailed list of projects happening in throughout the state. I think this is the longest report I've heard you give us. Board members, do you have any questions? No questions, Dee Dee. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Have a productive meeting. Good to see you all.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend, I think we had talked about going out of order on the agenda. I would recommend that we stick with the order of the agenda. And if it's okay with you, I have a few updates to provide at this point under EO report. Responding with some very general updates on some of the items that board members mentioned. I'm grateful that Dee Dee did such a great job of providing updates on the Potter Valley project and noting the regional board's coordination with state board on that. I just wanted to add that this board has requested an information item about the Potter Valley project and that we have certainly not lost track of that, but we are planning to wait until after that March filing that's anticipated from the JPA so that there's more information about next steps and the path forward so that info item can be a little bit meatier than the current information that we have. I mentioned this at the last board meeting, but because board member Giusti mentioned hearing questions about the vineyard order, I just wanted to share again for folks who are listening that we heard the board's interest in not rushing that item and making sure we had a really thorough public process. Our current plan is to bring that back to the board after harvest this year so that there aren't board workshops or hearings interfering with folks' harvest obligations. And then lastly, I wanted to give a little bit of an update about the Klamath Dam removal, which as you all know, we had a really great thorough photo-packed information item at our last board meeting about those dam removals. And the update since then is that drawdown began in January at Iron Gate, J.C. Boyle, and Copco One dams. Drawdown is a step that's, as you know, is necessary to move toward removal of the dams and restoring the free-flowing river later this year. As was anticipated in the environmental analysis for the project, we have seen observable water quality impacts downstream, including high turbidity and depleted dissolved oxygen. And those, you know, those were impacts that were noticing, and I understand troubling to folks that are seeing them, but they were anticipated. I wanted to note that the 401 water quality certification for those dam removals is being managed by the Division of Water Rights at State Board, but that our staff are involved in that in a consulting role and very much involved with the project. The Klamath River Renewal Corporation is funding long-term water quality monitoring as part of the Klamath River hydroelectric settlement. And State Board and the Regional Board are both receiving monthly reports on that water quality monitoring data and participating in monthly oversight meetings with KRRC agencies and tribes. I wanted to note, as you're aware, that the regional board's restoration policy does acknowledge that restoration projects like dam removals can result in temporary exceedances of water quality objectives, and that those short-term impacts are part of the process of long-term restoration in a project like this. So again, I understand, you know, I think perhaps part of the reason that Board Member Hart has been hearing from the public is that there have been these impacts observed downstream. Those are certainly raising concerns in the community, but they are consistent with what was contemplated when the environmental analysis was done for this project. And they're part of a longer term trajectory of restoration in the Klamath River. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much,
Alex. That's not all I have. I also wanted to add a small thing, which is that we're also knowing that folks are so interested in this and that they're looking to us for updates, we're adding on our website some key links where people can find information more directly from the source. So links to where to find information on Klamath River Renewal Corporation's website and where they can find information on State Board's website about the 401 water quality certification. So we'll be getting that info up shortly so that if people come looking to our website for info, it'll route them to the right place.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Valerie. I really appreciate that.
Valerie, are we going to take on item number two?
I would suggest just keeping with the order of the agenda as it's written.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Board Chair's report. I'm glad you all made it here. Thank you very much for coming. I don't have anything much to report than other than glad we all survived that storm, that wicked storm we went through. Just sorry to hear of all the mud flows in Southern California, but you know, that's climate change and we have to prepare for it. Public forum. Okay. So let me read this. Time will be reserved for the general public to address the board on any matter within the board's jurisdiction, excluding those items on the agenda. The board chair may limit the public forum to 30 minutes initially and continue any remaining appearances beyond the 30 minutes at the end of the regularly scheduled business of the day. The board chair requests that each person addressing the board limit their presentations to 5 minutes.
Right, thanks, sir. You said I got 5 minutes?
Yes.
Well, dang, I've never had that much. We changed it since the last time we saw you. I'm from Roseland, and 30 years ago, I began to come to this agency. None of you know me, probably, but we came because we had formed a citizens cleanup coalition in Roseland due to stormwater pollution and the contaminated underground aquifer with a
restart.
It's all cool by me. You guys heard it. I get five more still, right? All right.
Okay, can you state your name, please?
Yes, sir. Yeah. My name is Dwayne DeWitt, and I'm from Roseland.
Great.
All right. 30 years ago, I began to come to this body because Roseland's stormwater pollution and the contaminated underground aquifer with a commingled plume of petroleum and TCE pollution had basically created such a problem in our community for many years that we had a McMinn Avenue State Superfund site declared in 1984. So I was part of a group we called the Citizens Cleanup Coalition, which forced large fines against Acme Auto Wreckers along Sebastopol Road. And they paid some of the largest fines ever from this body's decisions. But unfortunately, the pollution is still there. Also, many sites are contaminated brownfields. 7 years ago, I helped to write a successful grant to help Sonoma County Community Development Commission receive $392,000 from the US EPA for phase one assessments of 15 sites in Roseland along Sebastopol Road. This is the most disadvantaged, underserved, and overburdened census district in all of Sonoma County. Since Santa Rosa annexed this area 7 years ago, the city has been allowing housing to be built above the contaminated sites, such as junkyards and auto wrecking yards. There is a concern locally the pollution is not being fully cleared and resolved. Concerns about vapor intrusion of pollution up into the housing specifically. People have told me they have many concerns. Who should we talk to here in this agency to resolve these concerns and reassure the new homeowners and residents? In the past, we had some contacts. We've lost them all. You're all new people here. The second thing I wanted to ask you about is Roseland Creek as a stormwater retention area to recharge the aquifer and the groundwater for well users to be able to continue to use their wells in these areas. Excuse me. Many Roseland well owners were forced off of their wells because of the contaminated aquifer in the past. Sonoma County and Santa Rosa, along with this agency, created a red zone in Roseland near that former McMinn Avenue State Superfund site and forced the well owners to go onto city water. Now, current well owners who still kept their wells but don't use them as much are quite concerned that nearby areas are being paved over by the city. And they're very concerned as they watch this new growth of housing and look at it as how it's going to affect the ability for their wells to have integrity in the future. So all this paving that's going on, all these different things that are happening, we don't really have one contact point to go to. In the past, we had some people here at this body, and they were, if you'll excuse our expression, a bit more reasonable, we felt, because we would try to deal with city people and county people and never really get an answer and not find out what was going on, whereas a person here that worked with us in the past helped us at that Citizens Cleanup Coalition, which actually got funding from Sonoma County supervisors and had Supervisor Ernie Carpenter involved with us at the time. And then Mike Riley also was involved before he went on to be on the Coastal Commission. So thank you for listening to me and giving me the time and not saying your time's up, Mr. DeWitt. All right.
Thank you, sir. Valerie. Can we address his concerns?
Yes. Heidi Bauer is the supervisor or the senior over our site cleanups unit. And Heidi Bauer, and she's not here at the meeting today, but her supervisor, Charles Reed, is here. So he can help you get connected unless you feel confident in going on the website and tracking down her contact. But
cards and I call people up. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Charles can help get you connected with Heidi.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Dwayne, you know, I clearly remember the number of times you came before this board. So, and I always admired, and I still do, your clarity and explanation, what you need. As I was listening to your comments, you know, I was checking off the projects that you were mentioning, and I was thinking, well, that's city planning, that's city public health, that's city environmental health. And I could appreciate the morass of bureaucracies with the number of topics that you touched on. So I appreciate Valerie, you know, here and now helping you at least get that contact, because I know this agency in the past and this board have supported your concerns and your efforts. And I'm glad that we can still do that. So Valerie, thank you. And, you know, and I know if it's Charles or another staff member, they'll be there for you like we've been in the past. So thank you for bringing those concerns forward.
And sir, that's why we're here. We're here to help our entire region. And thank you for coming. Petra, is there anybody else?
I have not received any other requests for public comment. There's nobody on Zoom waiting to comment.
Okay, thank you. That brings us to election of board officers. I would entertain a motion.
Go ahead.
I would like to entertain a motion to elect both for the vice
I would like to elect Greg Gusey for the vice chair position and yourself, Hector Bedoya, as continued chair of this board.
I'll second.
Thank you. Can we call a vote? Any discussion?
That's for the money and the glory, right?
Yes.
It goes along with the titles. Yeah.
Deirdre, can you call the vote?
Chair Bedoya?
Aye.
Vice Chair Giusti?
Aye.
Board Member Hart?
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg?
Aye.
Is Bill on? Okay. Okay, presentation of executive officers. Are we going to delay that or?
We can go for it. Thank you. It is my great pleasure to be able to present the Executive Officers Water Quality Stewardship Award. This is something that was created by my predecessor, Matt St. John, and I think was a brilliant idea of his to really highlight and acknowledge the efforts going on in our region that complement the regional board's work, but in a different way. You know, we have this regulatory charge and focus, and but we also have a vision of that regulation being paired with strong partnerships to create healthy watersheds. And so this award is designed to highlight some of those strong partnerships. So this year's award is based on an effort in the Laguna de Santa Rosa watershed, which is the home watershed here for our office. And it's also the largest tributary to the Russian River. And it's also the most urbanized watershed in our region. And because of that, it has a complex history of land development and hydro modification and water quality issues. And as we've worked on development of a total maximum daily load for the Laguna de Santa Rosa, we've really recognized that bringing the Laguna back to being a healthy watershed won't be possible just through source control. It will also require restoration. Another thing about the Laguna is that the majority of it is privately owned by individuals and businesses and families. And so to do restoration, it requires the participation of those folks, which can be a pretty heavy ask to open land up to heavy machinery, to go altering creek channels, you know, potentially taking land out of ag production or other uses. It's a heavy ask. And so one of the really useful tools in this kind of restoration is land protection. And we're so lucky in Sonoma County to have Sonoma Ag and Open Space, which is a district that protects land throughout Sonoma County for multiple uses. And in this case, they have had a huge accomplishment of protecting two key properties in the Laguna watershed, Denner Ranch and the LaFranchi property. And these, you know, the protection of these lands will have multiple benefits for the community. But one of those benefits is laying the groundwork for restoration of really, really key sites that will have a great benefit for fish and wildlife and the overall hydrologic function of the Laguna de Santa Rosa. And really recognize how protecting a piece of land is just a huge undertaking, both for the district and for the landowners that are going through that process of, you know, documenting the property and negotiating values of the property and deciding which areas will be protected in which ways. And so thought it was very fitting after this great accomplishment to provide this year's Executive Officer Stewardship Award to Sonoma County Ag and Open Space, and also to the Denner family and Ken LaFranchi and his family. And so the landowners involved have been informed of this and you know, expressed their pleasure at receiving the award. They're also busy folks that can't always show up to a public meeting on a Thursday morning. And so I don't believe we have any of them here, but we have a great contingent from Ag and Open Space to accept the award and to pass it on to those participating landowners as well. So I guess I'll just get up from my little microphone and come.
Would you mind coming up and saying a few words and letting us know what's involved in your work? Valerie described it well in her words, but I'd like to hear from you.
Sure, of course. Is the mic on? Okay. My name is Misty Adias, and I'm the general manager for Sonoma County Agricultural Preservation and Open Space District. And we are a special district, as Valerie mentioned, of the county that was created in 1990 with a quarter-cent sales tax increase to fund conservation of land throughout the county for agriculture, natural resources, recreational uses, and green belts, because at the time there were no community, there were no urban growth boundaries that were voted on in the county. Our funding was reauthorized, in 2006 and runs through 2031. And our work is primarily with private landowners through conservation easement acquisition to conserve conservation values in a multitude of ways. And as Valerie mentioned, the Laguna is incredibly important to us, but it is a very parcelized area. And so in order to make significant progress in that region, we have to work with lots of landowners. These two projects are approximately 600 acres, which in the grand scheme of land conservation isn't huge, but in a watershed such as this is very significant. And they also have the original confluence of Mark West Creek into the Laguna on them, which has been rerouted and altered significantly. So these two projects themselves are very exciting. And I would just say, as an organization, one of the challenges that we have, and I think you all face quite often, is honoring and conserving agricultural legacy and trying to also further responsible management of natural systems and resources. And I think it's a great connector that we can help accomplish, and being able to pay these landowners for conservation easements really helped bring them to the table on the restoration project. So we're really happy and feel honored to be able to play the role that we do in the county. And thank you very much for recognizing the work.
Thank you.
I just have a quick follow-up question. What agencies do you tend to work with on your easements for funding, or is it all private in-house? I mean, are you working with Wildlife Conservation Board or the Department of Conservation? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. So our annual sales tax revenue is approximately $32 million. So we do have significant local funding, but we use that to help leverage outside dollars. And we do often work with the State Coastal Commission, the Wildlife Conservation Board, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and then also private agencies and nonprofit organizations or private foundations that have funding, like the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, to try to leverage those local resources. And often we work in partnership with local nonprofit partners like Sonoma Land Trust, and they'll bring some of those resources to projects, and we'll use local match as a draw.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you for the work you and your organization have done. And in my career with UC, I've had a lot of experience and exposure working with the group. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you get recognized for these two wonderful projects, but it's, you know, decades of work that got you here. So yes. I'm glad that we had the chance to recognize you and thank you all for all the past work that you've done and the future work that I know you'll do. It's good stuff. And I love seeing the old pictures of the Laguna, the 1920s and 1930s. It was such a recreational hotspot for folks down here. Maybe someday we'll see boats back out there and people in parasols having picnics.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I would like to request a motion to approve minutes of our previous meeting. If there's any discussion.
I motion to approve minutes from our December 2023 meeting.
I'll second.
Thank you. Deidre, can you call a vote, please?
Chair Bedoya?
Aye.
Vice Chair Giusti?
Aye.
Board Member Hart?
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg?
Aye.
Thank you. Pardon me, I'm getting over a cold. Yeah, let's take a break. A 15-minute break. come back at 5 after 10. Thank you very much. The break was much appreciated. And thank you for that monkey bread. It's awesome.
You're welcome.
All right. Next on the agenda, we have the items on the uncontested calendar. We have for consideration item number 4, public hearing to consider adoption of proposed order number R1-2024-0003. General waste discharge requirements and general water quality certification for the Mendocino County Permit Coordination Program and Associated Monitoring Program, and item 5, public hearing on order number R1-2024-0005 to consider adoption of the proposed waste discharge requirements for Willow Creek Community Services District Wastewater Treatment Facility. Do any board members wish to open a hearing to discuss either of these items?
Chair Badia, I have one.
Yes.
Badola, sorry. I'm not proposing that we open a public hearing for this item, but I did have an ex parte communication with a person from the Community Services District in Willow Creek. And so on, I had a phone call with Susan Orgorman from the Willow Creek Community Services District on February 1st, 2024 at 4:20 p.m. And I had a few questions for them. It was, first one is, I looked at the scope of the project, and it didn't include a lot of other areas that are right in the town. And then the other one was, if they were using recycled water, or if they had an ultraviolet disinfectant system where they could recycle the water, because we just came off a pretty large drought for many years, so thought that would be important. And she explained to me that this grant was 100%, or this project was 100% grant funded, and that it's a small, very small community, and so they basically had enough money to do what they did. She also explained that it's an expandable project, and they are going to try to get grants going forward to do wastewater recycling and then also add more connections to the community. And so she also explained that this project is for the downtown area. There's many businesses that are on septic systems, and so there's a hotel, for instance, a couple of gas stations, a grocery store. So I can imagine that their pumping fees are either really large, or some is escaping through the leach field and such, that's probably not super well. So this is going to be a really good project for the community. They can put those and clean up those sites for those businesses, and then also they're able to expand more businesses. So that was good news to hear, and they answered all my questions. And I didn't have any other conversations with anybody from the public or the services district on this project, and I'm prepared to consider the permit as it's proposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Is there anyone here from the public or any regulated party who wishes to address the board on either of these items? If not, then I would entertain a motion to adopt item 4 and 5 on the uncontested calendar.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Pedro.
Chair Bedoya.
Aye.
Vice Chair Giusti.
Aye.
Board Member Hart.
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg.
Aye.
Thank you. So we're moving on to item number six. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of order number R1-2024-0001, general waste discharge requirements for discharges related to specific types of forest management activities on non-federal lands in the North Coast Region. This item has been properly noticed. Will all those who expect to give testimony in the matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in these matters? Thank you. Timelines for these presentations are as follows. Staff, 30 minutes. Interested public, 5 minutes each, or as outlined below. At this time, we will start with the staff presentation.
Good morning. My name is Justin Fitt, environmental scientist with the Southern Timber Unit at the North Coast Water Board. This item is the public hearing to consider adoption of the proposed general waste discharge requirements for discharges related to specific types of forest management activities on non-federal lands in the North Coast region. This agenda item has been publicly noticed, and in your agenda package is the proposed order, public notice, the comment letter we received during public comment period, and our response to comments. The proposed order essentially transitions the categorical waiver, which has been in place since 2004, into general waste discharge requirements, with some minor changes, which we'll describe fully. So in my presentation today, I'll give an overview of the Regional Water Board's general permits for discharges related to timber harvesting, a brief background of the development of the proposed order, adopting what we refer now to as the forest management waste discharge requirements. I'll then go over some proposed revisions to the categorical waiver included in the proposed order, and then Jonathan Warmerdam will go over response to public comment and provide additional discussion regarding the status of changes to the emergency notices of timber operations for post-fire timber salvage logging. So into our overview. So the North Coast Water Board currently administers three primary general timber harvest permits. So for number one, for routine timber harvest plans, staff enroll projects under general waste discharge requirements, order number R1-2004-0030. This is a discretionary permit. It covers most of the industrial timber activities in the North Coast region. Timber harvest plans receive extensive review, inspection, and conditioning by various review team agencies, including CAL FIRE, the California Geological Survey, the Regional Water Boards, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Number two on the slide, non-industrial timber management plans. Staff utilize order number R1-2013-2005. Similar to timber harvest plans, these are also discretionary permits that require submittal of application for enrollment under the order, extensive review, and inspections. Today's discussion will be focused on the last category of general timber permits, number three on the slide. That's the timber categorical waiver, order number R1-2014-0011, which permits a number of different types of forest management projects, including exemptions and emergency notices that have been authorized by CAL FIRE pursuant to forest practice rules. I'll provide an overview of the different types of activities covered by the existing timber categorical waiver, touch a bit on the history of the permit, and explain the few minor changes that we're proposing for your consideration of adoption under order number R1-2024-0001. So a bit of history. The categorical waiver was originally adopted back in 2004 in response to changes to section 13269 of Porter Cologne that resulted in the expiration of existing waivers and putting a 5-year lifespan on new waivers. In 2019, the waiver was renewed. 2009, excuse me, the waiver was renewed and revised. And following the 2009 renewal, the revised order was petitioned. The matter was ultimately resolved, and it led to the adoption of the non-industrial timber management plan, general waste discharge requirements. In 2014, the proposed order was passed with minor revisions, and 5 years later, in 2019, prior to expiration, the waiver was renewed again. As some of the board members that were present at the time may recall, the 2019 renewal of the categorical waiver was done during the beginning of a period of time of increased scrutiny of exemption and emergency notice project performance. As such, that renewal was adopted in order to allow additional time for CAL FIRE and the Board of Forestry, as well as the other review team agencies, more time to conduct monitoring and report to legislature on the performance of these projects. We'll provide an overview of what's occurred since 2019 later on in the presentation. So the original timber categorical waiver established conditions for six categories of projects that were eligible for coverage, including exemptions such as a stand of forest trees that might need a dead, disease or dying thinning. Emergency notices, of course, includes post-fire timber salvage logging, less than 3 acre timberland conversions, projects that have been determined to be in compliance with a sediment TMDL action plan, the Garcia, modified timber harvest plans, which have size restrictions and additional restrictions, non-industrial timber management plans, and a general category for timber harvest plans and other CEQA-compliant projects. There were 11 specific conditions that applied to THPs authorized by the categorical waiver, and they were generally intended to cover low-impact projects. There were no fees associated with these projects, and landowners enrolled for coverage by submitting a notice certifying that the project meets waiver conditions. The categorical structure of the waiver is largely preserved in the proposed order with only minor modification. So now we can talk about some actual changes we made. So the main change with the proposed order is that it replaces the categorical waiver with general waste discharge requirements. As waste discharge requirements do not expire, this eliminates the need to come back to the board every 5 years for renewal. The waiver has existed largely in its current state through multiple revision cycles. It's proven to be a robust permit, and we don't believe it needs to be renewed every 5 years. However, it's important to note that the Regional Water Board retains the duty and the ability to revise general waste discharge requirements as needed. So the second substantive change is the removal of coverage of standard THPs and the reorganization of some of the categories. Former category E for NTMPs was actually removed from the waiver in 2013 when we developed a separate permit for those projects. We're proposing the elimination of standard THPs for eligibility under category F, which will now be category E. So initially, when timber harvest plans were included in the original waiver, there was a fee associated with coverage under general waste discharge requirements, but not for waiver coverage. But even with this financial incentive for landowners to create THPs that met waiver conditions, only a small percentage of landowners were using this permit. With the passage of Assembly Bill 1492 and the Timber Regulation and Forest Restoration Tax, fees no longer apply to timber harvesting activities. As such, there was no financial incentive to seek coverage for THPs under a waiver, and we've determined that there's simply no longer a need for two general permits for standard THPs. To simplify the enrollment process, they will no longer be eligible for coverage under the proposed order. So shown here is the newly organized list of categories that are proposed for the forest management waste discharge requirements. Again, former category F, which was THPs and CEQA-compliant projects, is now category E in the proposed order because of the removal of NTMPs. And other CEQA-compliant projects is a catch-all that could include forest management projects on state parks or other types of projects that are in compliance with CEQA. We've removed 7 of the 11 specific conditions that were specific to THPs, but retained 4 conditions that would apply to all forest management projects, relating to wet weather limitations and identification and treatment of controllable sediment discharge sources. A few more revisions. So a new specific requirement has been added requiring responsible parties to conduct field evaluations of the project area to identify sites that are discharging or threatening to discharge sediment or adversely impact beneficial uses of water. And if sites are found, propose corrective action for each site to be implemented during the period the project is enrolled under the order. This new general requirement borrows language from the Forest Practice Rules, section 923.7K and 9239U, in interest of interagency alignment. Next, there are updates to Category A, intended specifically to reference recently adopted Forest Practice Rule categories for emergencies and exemptions. And in Section 4, Termination of Coverage, it specifies that projects enrolled under Categories A through D will remain covered under the erosion control maintenance period, and responsible parties with projects enrolled under Categories E must request unenrollment by submitting a notice of termination. The project enrolled in Category E remains enrolled until the Regional Water Board issues an unenrollment letter. And so we've revised the existing categorical waiver as described, and on September 26, 2023, released a draft order for public review and comments. We reached out to a wide list of timber interests, conservation groups, disadvantaged communities and tribes, and we received one written comment letter during the public comment period, which closed on October 26, 2023. The one comment letter from EPIC, the Environmental Protection Innovation Center, addressed our handling of emergency notices. The comments received by EPIC articulated concerns that the Board of Forestry and CAL FIRE would not follow through to adequately protect water resources from the impacts of post-fire logging and road construction implemented under emergency notice projects. EPIC recommends waiting for the Board of Forestry and CAL FIRE to adopt regulations that protect water quality instead of proceeding with the adoption of the forest management waste discharge requirements today. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jonathan Warmerdam. He's going to provide a status update on the monitoring of emergency notices, as well as forest practice rule changes that are being considered by the Board of Forestry and CAL FIRE.
Good morning, Chair Bedoya, members of the board. My name is Jonathan Warmerdam. I'm an environmental program manager here, overseeing our non-point source and surface water protection division, which includes our forest activities program. Today, I'm going to drill down a little bit deeper into the emergency notice of timber operations subject, which several of you have heard me present on as recent as June of 2022, where I provided a presentation during an information item that included members of the Board of Forestry and CAL FIRE when we articulated some of our concerns regarding water quality relative to emergency notices of timber operations. So just to give a quick recap, CAL FIRE administers emergency notices as ministerial authorizations, that being RPF, a registered professional forester, submits information to CAL FIRE declaring that they will be conforming with the requirements to enroll a project and be authorized under that process. Those are then, as soon as those are authorized by CAL FIRE, they are automatically enrolled under our categorical waiver, which Justin was just mentioning. The same process will take place with this revised forest management GWDR. Ever since 2019, as Justin alluded, we've been assessing the adequacy of the water quality protection standards provided by the forest practice rules, as well as our own categorical waiver relative to emergency notices. And I'll touch a bit further on some of the conclusions from that period. Just a little background, in 2018, with the passage of Senate Bill 901 by Senator Dodd, that required that CAL FIRE and the Board of Forestry monitor and report to the legislature annually on the use and the performance of emergency notices of timber operations, as well as exemptions. And in 2019, CAL FIRE embarked on its first monitoring effort of emergency notices, where they did a statewide random probabilistic survey of 54 different emergency notices to get a sense of how those were performing relative to the expectations of the forest practice rules and normal administration of forestry projects. During that time, the North Coast Water Board staff engaged in 20 of those. So quite a few of those, we were able to be on the ground with our own staff, conducting the inspections with them and calibrating with CAL FIRE during that process. And in December of 2019, CAL FIRE and the Board of Forestry issued a report on that. The conclusions from that 2019 report, which I discussed during the June 2022 meeting at length, were unfortunately that 40% of those projects inspected were identified as either being substandard or unacceptable as that related to water quality protection. A lot of that had issues related to roads, watercourse crossings, erosion control, and other matters that are of typical concern to us. As such, as I mentioned before, in June of 2022, we held a joint meeting here during the normal North Coast Water Board hearing, where we held an informational workshop on emergency notices with the Board of Forestry's executive officer, Edith Hannigan, as well as representation from CAL FIRE, including Chief Eric Huff. During that time, we articulated some of our concerns about emergency notices. And subsequently, in August of 2022, the water boards collectively issued a letter to the Board of Forestry during the request for regulatory review, in which we articulated some of the similar concerns that were brought forth to this board in June. Those included the expectation that we would better need, performance would improve if we better defined which operational provisions of the forest practice rules actually applied to emergency notices. It's not currently clear in the forest practice rules which of those do apply. Additionally, the need to address the approval process for watercourse crossing construction and reconstruction activities, and then clarification as to whether the management measures in the forest practice rules, known as the road rules, whether those apply to emergency notices. Since 2019, the Board of Forestry, CAL FIRE, and the review team agencies have been collectively working to improve performance on these emergency notices. There's been a lot of outreach and education efforts that have been underway. There's increased trainings for registered professional foresters and licensed timber operators. And then agencies have been conducting more inspections and developing, we've been developing specific monitoring protocols ourselves also, and increasing our technology in this office to advance our inspection and reporting on some of these projects. There's also been distribution of different informational flyers, educational materials, and very importantly, the water boards have been working closely with CAL FIRE, CDFW, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the Board of Forestry to craft potential forest practice rule changes around these issues that we have articulated as concern. There's also been a second round of emergency notice monitoring that was conducted in 2023. We had been waiting to conduct that second round to see whether performance actually had improved since the 2019 inspection period. And in a week ago, 2 weeks ago, CAL FIRE and the Board of Forestry circulated for the public the monitoring results of that second round of monitoring. The conclusions, unfortunately, that when compared to previous, the 2019 monitoring, the water quality outcomes were largely unchanged. We didn't see a substantial improvement in the performance. There were still issues related to erosion control, watercourse crossing construction, and different types of activities that this report articulated. From this report, those six new recommendations were generated. And the report findings only support the conclusion that modifications to the forest practice rules are warranted to improve performance of these projects. The six different recommendations include increased regulatory inspections, which has been occurring. However, with the increasing fire regime, the increasing severity of these fires, we're seeing more emergency notices being utilized. And so as such, the need to get on the ground is dispersed. When you have more projects, you need more resource to look at them. And CAL FIRE themselves are starting to see that there's limitations on their end of their ability to to track these. So they're in need of additional resources, conducting additional inspections. The need to continue to develop educational materials and doing more outreach is always going to be present. Then there's a prioritization of management practices related to roads, crossings, and tractor operations near watercourses. So really getting at the heart of the water quality concerns. CAL FIRE and Board of Forestry are articulating that there is a need there that needs to be specified. And clarifying which operational provisions of the forest practice rules apply is really the way to do that. And additionally, there's a new introduction of requiring more extensive mapping of roads, watercourse crossings, and significant existing and potential erosion sites, which as we speak, is not a requirement under these projects. So that would be a great advancement in these rules. And then lastly, there's a recognition that certain small landowners are at a disadvantage regarding resource availability to address the needs of capital road improvements and other things. And so CAL FIRE was really focused in on trying to support those entities. Quick recap, 2018 was that first emergency notice monitoring. In 2019, CAL FIRE took actions to increase project performance. In 2022, the Regional Water Board held our workshop here where we articulated our water quality concerns. In August of 2022, the water boards, including all of the different regional water boards with forest activities programs, issued a joint letter to the Board of Forestry re-articulating some of our concerns. In 2023, the emergency notice second round of monitoring occurred. And then this report was just released 2 weeks ago. As far as next steps, we're going to continue to engage with the Board of Forestry and CAL FIRE and other review team agencies in crafting proposed language changes for the forest practice rules to improve this process. And we have been quite engaged for a number of months now in directly crafting draft information that is in the public sphere, going to Board of Forestry meetings and producing this information. But we're still in the period where decision-making about the final rule language is underway. We're waiting for adoption of those rule changes and other changes that I've mentioned. And then evaluating the sufficiency of the water quality protections once those changes are made will be necessary for us to make a decision that in the future, if deemed necessary, we'll draft a new permit. If there are still water quality concerns that aren't addressed, we'll have to bring that to the board for future consideration. We've always been very open and about that being a potentiality, but it makes the most sense for us right now to go forward with supporting the Board of Forestry and CAL FIRE as these rule changes are taking place, rather than promulgating different rules at this moment that may at some point be in conflict with a future set of rules. We feel like this is the right proposal that we're putting forward on the table, that transitioning this to a general waste discharge requirement order now provides us efficiencies down the road based on just our expectation that we're going to see some of these changes. That's why we're bringing it forward today with a staff recommendation that you adopt proposed order number R1-2024-0001. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention the Environmental Protection Information Center, their public comment was to wait and let the forest practice rules be changed in advance of us proposing adoption of this permit now. This permit expires in April of 2024. And so if we don't have a permit in play, we basically will not have coverage for these until some other future permit is brought forward. So for that and for the other reasons I mentioned that we anticipate seeing improvements to the forest practice rules, that is why we're proposing this new order. With that, I'll open it up for any questions that any of you have.
Thank you so much, Justin and Jonathan. Appreciate it. Board members, would you like to ask questions?
I would. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Very good presentation, very articulate. Does the proposed change add any extra costs or regulatory burdens to those who would fall into this new GWDR?
No, it should not. There's nothing additional that is being layered on top of our existing process, aside from the clarification that is reiterating what the forest practice rules already states relative to the monitoring during the maintenance period of these projects. So nothing additional is incurred through this next step.
Mr. Simmons' letter from EPIC, I thought had merit. I liked the way he laid it out. I thought he made his, I thought the organization made its point clearly. Do we lose leverage by taking this action today and not extending the categorical waiver? Do we lose any type of leverage with the Board of Forestry to continue to put pressure on them to move down this path?
I do not believe that we do. We've been very clear with the board all along that if the changes to the forest practice rules do not occur to ensure that protection of water quality is implemented, then we would come with our own permit and bring that forward. So even with a GWDR being adopted, we can come at any time and present to the board a new proposed order.
The Board of Forestry over the last 20 years, you know, has worked hard and done and taken some great steps in improving water quality through timber harvest activities. You know, the WLPZ rules, the ASP rules to protect anadromous fish, and their most recent road rules package has gone a long way. So all of those activities were designed to address green tree harvest on timberlands. I guess I'm a little concerned as to why salvage tree harvesting that uses the same equipment, the same techniques, the same roads, you know, what's the hesitation to treat that activity similar to a green tree removal? I think that's our argument, is that as from a water quality perspective, whether you take a burnt tree or whether you take a green tree out of the forest, you do it the same way. And the risks are the same to roads and stream crossings and streamside protection. So, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but it strikes me that it's so obvious that I would hope that your pressure on the Board of Forestry would help them see our perspective, our point of view on that, and continue to move them forward sooner than later. So, as we talked in our briefing, you know, again, recognizing that these rules only apply to timberland, and only timberland that's going to have an active CEQA project. And we know there's lots of other issues out there on forest lands, and timberland being defined by the availability of commercial species on the property. But we know there are other forest lands, oak woodlands, non-commercial types of forests, where roads are there and there's similar water quality impacts that these rules do not address. And someday we're going to get to that, I think, and hopefully. But and as I told, you know, both you, Justin and Jonathan, you know, I trust in you taking this message forward and presenting this board's past history and point of view on the relationship between green tree harvest or salvage harvesting, recognizing that it's the same thing essentially and how it's done. So thank you for your work on this, and look forward to seeing where we go with this.
Thank you.
Board members, any further discussion?
Yeah, is one of the reasons why it's treated differently is because once the tree is dead and on the ground, it has a increased fire risk going forward, or is that one of the reasons?
That is That is amongst the collection of reasons. In particular, though, when a forest burns at high severity and you have mortality of the trees, there's only a window of opportunity to actually harvest and generate any money revenue from those trees. And so there's this balance between a standing dead forest, which has its own risks itself, versus the value of the standing timber that could be sent to a mill. So if you don't harvest, you then end up with a dead forest that needs to be addressed at some point, or may be a greater risk to wildfire as you have standing dead timber down the road, whether that be to adjacent communities or adjacent forests, but also the need to address whatever other associated liabilities that go along with that. It's not cheap to remove trees, as we know. And so many landowners are actually end up breaking even just with any money that they are able to generate to kind of restart the stand that is on their property. So when you think of like the Mark West Creek area after the 2017 fires, we have a lot of small ownerships and properties that are out in the forested area. We had high severity fire come through, and then you have communities that want to rebuild on their property. If they're unable to go in an expedited manner and get those trees out and generate any type of value to just pay for the kind of resetting of that forest situation, then they can be left otherwise in a unfavorable position. Additionally, when you're talking about industrial scale forestry, the industrial scale timber landowners spend their decades generating a forest stand for the purpose of generating wood products. And when you have a catastrophic fire that comes through and in one season, depletes that or liquidates all of the assets that you've been really generating over those years, there is a need to get it out as soon as possible. Additionally, like you mentioned, the risks of just fuel on the ground it's a significant one. So it's a culmination of a number of different reasons.
Thank you. And then my other question is, what kind of technology do you guys use for monitoring?
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. We have staff on hand that have been developing these using technologies like tablets to develop geo-referenced mapping of when they're out conducting inspections, the ability to use these tablets like an iPad to take photos that then identifies a very specific location on a map that they've actually brought in from CAL FIRE. Then when they fill in information of any recommendations or water quality concerns there, once they come back into a cell phone signal or close to our office, they can automatically generate reports, which articulates all of the information they'd gathered in the field, the locations, the photo points, and associate those with a map. It's a really fascinating, neat, and efficient technology for us that we'd love to see used in a lot of our programs. So it was pretty neat to embark on some of that.
Is there any satellite imagery that you guys use?
I don't know that we typically use satellite imagery as we're doing timber harvest inspection reviews. We're provided all extensive mapping of the locations, but you have a sense. Justin would probably have a better sense of that, maybe.
Generally, not relying too heavily on satellite imagery when we head into the field. I did want to make a quick note about some fairly recent helicopter contracts that our regional water board has secured, and various staff have been coming up with ways to utilize helicopters to our benefit. And for these large post-fire timber stands, we found the helicopters to be very invaluable because you can cover a landscape scale area in an afternoon and identify potential
mass wasting areas or just areas of interest or concern. So.
And the reason I ask is when I was on the Board of Supervisors for Humboldt County, we started up our cannabis enforcement and all that. And we purchased a contract with a satellite company that would get down to like 6 feet off the ground is where you could really see things. And then also monitor if there was changes, plus or minus. And it was very effective, probably still is effective. I've been there for 5 years, but I'm sure that it's still effective in monitoring what's going on the ground without having to go out into the field or seeing something that you're like, well, we do need to go out there and check that out. So just bring that up.
I would also add that we do use LIDAR based systems. Some timber companies will actually do different series of LIDAR overflights to identify whether there's changes in mass wasting or different identifiable features over time. So that is a technology that we do have some of those data sets too, and utilize those.
Board Member Sundberg, I just wanted to mention, this is Josh Curtis of your staff. There's a kind of a statewide effort that was really spearheaded by this region and a number of our staff that we're still heavily involved in. I call it using artificial intelligence, but I think it's data learning. There's better terms for it, but essentially for the cannabis program, able to look at aerial imagery and find them, right? It goes out and finds where they are and then provides that reporting. I don't have an update. That's no longer in my program. I'm not sure if someone else does, but I do know that there's interest by many folks of using that same style of technology in other programs as time goes on. So, it can learn to find roads. It can learn to find changes in forest opening. That technology is, I'm sure, in some areas of the of our economy are well used and common, but for government, I think it's still pretty new, and we're heavily involved and kind of we're the spearhead of that effort at Region 1 for the state.
On the technology question, do you use drones at all? Cameras mounted on drones?
We have been contemplating the acquisition of drones, but at this point, I don't think we've moved forward. Josh can probably speak to that.
Chair Bedoya, we have drone programs in the state are really complicated. They require a pretty extensive development of a drone program with all sorts of rules that we don't yet understand here at the region. There is, I can't remember, there's a state board org, I think it might be water rights, but I can't remember. There's one who is starting to use drones, and I know Fish and Wildlife has. So we are kind of waiting to those, see how those programs develop so that we can then use that in order to help us determine whether we should go forward with it. But it's definitely complex and requires a lot of thought because of, issues with privacy, issues with, concerns about what happens if the drone hits something or, all sorts of things. So you need pilots. It's more than just buying a drone at a store. It's definitely a big project, but we're definitely interested in it and keeping our eyes.
Thank you. When I was involved in the vineyard industry, we hired a company called Terra Space, and they had student pilots flying as a most inexpensive vehicle. Student pilots flying over swaths of land in various areas, various regions, and they took infrared, thermal, all sorts of different wavelengths available in these fancy cameras. But anyway, that's just an interesting bit of history. Thank you very much for your presentation. Very much appreciated, and for the good of our world and our water quality. Thank you. I'd like to entertain a motion to adopt proposed order number R1-2024-0001.
So moved for adoption.
Second.
I second.
Deirdre, please.
Chair Bedoya?
Aye.
Vice Chair Giusti?
Aye.
Board Member Hart?
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that brings us to Executive Officer's Report.
Okay, well, I say this every time. There's really good stuff in the written Executive Officer's Report. And there's a lot in this month's. The thing that I would particularly point you to if you haven't had the chance to look at it yet is there are several pages on the Federal Lands Permit Watershed Assessment and Recovery Program. And that's a sort of novel regulatory tool that we're contemplating, including in the draft federal lands permit that will be out for public review in the next couple of months. And I believe is scheduled for a board workshop in April, if all goes as planned. And so I really encourage you in particular to review the article on the federal lands permit, what we're calling the WARP, Watershed Assessment and Recovery Program, because it's a new feature of this newest iteration of the permit. And I think the article does a great job kind of giving overviews of the concepts in a way that's understandable. The permit will include a lot more detail on calculations of credits and a lot more kind of dense information, but this is a really great place to start to understand that. So I encourage you to read all of the articles in the report. There's some really good stuff, but in particular, I'd point you to the federal lands permit article.
Thank you very much. Board members, do you have any requests for future agenda items or any other items of interest? Or updates?
Well, certainly, you know, any updates that can be provided, not trying to, I know there's a process involved, but anything to do with Lake Pillsbury and Scott's Dam. And I understand that some of those, you know, ongoing discussions are sensitive or maybe don't have good information, but when appropriate, always good to hear about those. And then, you know, the other, the big issue on our docket coming up is the vineyard order. I wouldn't mind some type of midstream update before the order is plopped before us and asked to make a decision. So if it works out, it would be nice to know what staff is thinking on how that order is progressing.
Those are exactly my thoughts. Of course, I'm staying out of that vineyard project, but also the Lake Pillsbury update and the climate change initiative update would be great.
And we do have the update on climate resiliency initiatives. We have that scheduled for April, and that's still the plan. So I know that's been a much requested item, and really excited to bring it to you in April, and certainly noted on the other items.
Okay, the next meeting will be Thursday, April 4th, 2024 at 9 a.m. and Friday, April 5th, 2024 at 9 a.m. here at 5550 Skyline Boulevard, Suite A, Santa Rosa, California, 95403. And with that, it's meeting adjourned. Thank you.